Hello, this is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, October 6th, 2025. From the front page of the paper, drought fuels fire warning. Dry conditions spark risks of field equipment fires in Illinois. By Rhiannon Branch of Farm Week. Dry conditions across much of Illinois increases the risk for field and equipment fires as harvest season ramps up. We've had a major shift in the environment this summer, keeping in mind how damp it was this spring, so this drought is a little unexpected, and it may not be top of mind for everybody to be thinking about just how dry it is out there. University of Illinois Extension Specialist Josie Ridolfi told Farm Week. Ridolfi shared 5 tips for farmers to help prevent and prepare for potential fires this season. Number 1, clean equipment. Make sure harvesting equipment is cleaned regularly to remove crop residue, grease, and oil. She recommended using a long-handled broom or leaf blower to remove debris in the field. Number 2, stick around. Operators should stay near field equipment until machines have cooled down appropriately. One thing we tend to see is people shut off the equipment. They're in a rush to get out of the field. They don't wait until the equipment is fully cooled down and something sparks and catches fire, Ridolfi said. Number 3, keep fire extinguishers handy. Make sure each machine has the proper fire extinguisher on board. This can help put out small fires or aid the operator in getting away from the machine safely. While we do encourage you to have your fire extinguisher handy, we also want to remind people how quickly fire moves, and it's more important that they get safely away from the fire than try to fight it themselves, Ridolfi said. Number 4, charge cell phones. Make sure cell phones are fully charged to have the ability to call 911. While it seems simple, it is easier said than done for farmers working long hours. Ridolfi recommended having a phone charger handy in every piece of equipment. They can be placed and restocked along with first aid kits each season. And number 5, have a 911 address list. Operators should have an accessible list of 911 addresses for every field so first responders know where to go. We know our fields by obscure names of people who lived there hundreds of years ago, but our fire department doesn't know the fields by the farm names that we've given them, Ridolfi said. The 911 address will easily direct emergency vehicles to your field if you need it. If a fire breaks out, following these prevention measures will minimize the risks, but fires can happen anywhere, anytime. If a fire does break out, operators are encouraged to get away from the fire and call 911 immediately, as fires can spread rapidly. Some recommendations have been to keep tillage equipment readily available, and I think that's wise, but I also think that's something you do in collaboration with a fire department, Ridolfi said, noting untrained individuals should not attempt to put out a fire to save crops or equipment. Let the first responders show up. They'll help direct tillage equipment if they think there's some utility to that, she said. Get as far away from the field as possible. Make way for emergency vehicles. And keep in mind things like overhead power lines and other compounding hazards that could be present. Resources. Field fires can cause loss of crops, equipment, and sometimes life. Ridolfi said it can be a devastating and stressful situation to be exposed to, but there are resources to help farmers cope. Through the Illinois Ag Mental Health Voucher Program, people can receive free professional behavioral health services. Individuals can also call the Concern Hotline at 800-447-1985. Ridolfi encourages farmers to use those resources to help manage stress. Turning to page 3, local news. Crash near Shelbyville claims man's life, by Tony Reed. Shelbyville. State police report that a sport utility vehicle was killed Saturday morning when his vehicle drifted into the path of an oncoming semi-truck on Illinois Route 16 near Shelbyville. Police reports from the scene said the 47-year-old man was headed eastbound near Shelby County Road 2250 North when the head-on crash happened around 9 a.m. after the SUV crossed into the line of oncoming traffic for an unknown reason. The SUV driver was proclaimed dead at the scene. The 62-year-old man driving the westbound semi-truck, which was hauling a hopper-bottom grain trailer, was taken to the hospital with what police described as minor injuries. The crash remains under investigation by troopers and the Shelby County coroner. Police, two neighbors arrested after dispute, by Tony Reed. Decatur. Police say they arrested two Decatur neighbors who attacked each other with metal pipes after trash-talking in a dispute over garbage that turned violent. The incident happened on East Wagoner Street on Friday evening, and Sergeant Adam Seifman with the Decatur Police Department said the male neighbor, aged in his mid-50s, ended up with a bump on his lower left forearm after being struck. The 31-year-old female neighbor, who allegedly hit him, told police the man had started it. She said the male kicked a piece of trash out of his yard into her yard and walked back into his residence, said Seifman. She had come out to confront him about that, and she picked up the trash that he kicked into her yard and placed it back into his yard. Seifman said it isn't clear from reports from the scene where the two combatants found the pipes they armed themselves with. Both were booked on preliminary charges of aggravated battery with a deadly weapon. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the Office of the State's Attorney. From page 5, National and World News, The Digest. Two killed by gunfire in Montgomery, Alabama. Montgomery. Rival gunmen shot at each other in a crowded downtown nightlife district in Alabama's capital city Saturday night, killing two people and injuring 12 others in a chaotic street scene, police said. The dead included a 43-year-old woman and a 17-year-old male, while 5 of the 14 people wounded were hospitalized with life-threatening injuries, including a juvenile, police said. No one was arrested as of Sunday afternoon, as police appealed to the public for information about the shooting and sorted through a complicated crime scene that included multiple people firing at each other. Russia launches major attack on Ukraine. Russia launched drones, missiles, and guided aerial bombs across Ukraine early Sunday, killing 5 people in a major nighttime attack that Ukrainian officials said targeted civilian infrastructure. Moscow fired 53 ballistic and cruise missiles and 496 drones, Ukraine's Air Force said. President Volodymyr Zelensky reported that 9 regions were targeted. 4 people, including a 15-year-old, died in a combined drone and missile strike in Lviv, according to regional officials and Ukraine's emergency service. It was the largest aerial assault on the historic western city and surrounding region since Russia's full-scale invasion on February 24, 2022, according to the head of the local military administration. Nepal. Landslides, a lightning strike, and flooding triggered by severe rainfall killed at least 44 people Sunday in Nepal, with 5 others reported missing, authorities said. Those killed included at least 37 people in the eastern mountain district of Ilam. China. Typhoon Matmo strengthened ahead of making landfall Sunday in China, prompting the government to evacuate about 347,000 people from the southern provinces of Guangdong and Henan. The typhoon had maximum sustained wind speeds of 94 miles an hour on Sunday morning, officials said. Indonesia. Rescuers searching for missing students after a prayer hall at an Islamic boarding school collapsed in Sotaharo, Indonesia, recovered more than 24 bodies over the weekend search, bringing the confirmed death total to 49. Mexico. Hurricane Priscilla formed Sunday in the Pacific Ocean off the southwestern coast of Mexico, with heavy rain and gusty winds affecting coastal areas. The Miami-based National Hurricane Center said Sunday that Priscilla was located about 290 miles southwest of Cabo Corrientes and was headed north-northwest at 3 miles per hour. Turning again to the front page. More than bricks and mortar, Milliken dedicates $12.3 million Rathje Athletic Center by Valerie Wells. Decatur. At the dedication of the David J. and Deborah C. Rathje Athletic Center at Milliken University, Kathy Rathje Brandon shared one of her father's stories from his high school athletic career in Cerro Gordo. Athletics were always central to the Rathje's life, she said. Her father, David, who stood just 5'6", joined his small-town basketball team because it only had 4 players and couldn't compete otherwise. The problem was, nobody was available to pick him up after practices. But the school bus driver ran his route, then came back for David and drove him home. That simple act of kindness, Brandon said, helped spark his lifelong love of athletics. Rathje, an alumnus of Milliken's class of 1958, died June 1st at age 88. Providing the athletic center name for him was a pleasure for the family, Brandon said. However, she suspects the students won't ever call it by its full name. A proper name means nothing to college students, Brandon quipped. My bet is the Milliken students are going to call the center the Rath. The center was dedicated in a ribbon-cutting ceremony attended by dozens of alumni, university staff, and student athletes decked out in their big blue homecoming swag to celebrate the new center. The 17,655-square-foot facility includes office space for coaches, team meeting rooms, a large weight room named for the Perryman family and coach Carl Polker, and a Hall of Fame wall celebrating the success of past coaches and students. The $12.3 million facility stands at the former location of the old gym, which was demolished in 2022. The site hosted an Army training center during World War I and social events for service members on leave during World War II, as well as Illinois High School Association Basketball Championships, said Lori Kernans, Vice President for Athletics and Community Engagement. We celebrate both what has been and what lies ahead, she said. We honor the countless stories that have unfolded within the walls of the old gym. And we look forward with excitement and anticipation to the new stories that will be written right here in the Rathje Athletic Center. Dean Pribinow, the university's 17th president, called it a joy to dedicate the new building. Today we pause to reflect and acknowledge not only the years of planning and dedication that brought this center to life, but also the limitless potential that it represents to every single student that walks through its doors, he said. Today is so much more than bricks and mortar. It is the promise of a vibrant future. When everybody here unites, this is what can be built, said Billy Rybak, head football coach. With Pribinow's leadership, we're going to thrive. God Bless Milliken. Student athlete Maddie Maragni, a member of the women's track team and a senior exercise science major at Milliken, said the center will be a boon to student athletes, who make up about 40% of the student body at the university. As a senior, I've truly enjoyed watching this building come to life, she said. She remembers watching the old gym being torn down as a freshman, and the groundbreaking for the Rath J. Center, and watching the building progress through the whole process, she said. Yes, it's a new building, but it's also a sign of investment and support in our athletic performance, she said. As an athlete myself, it's an awesome addition to our athletic achievements, for which I am so grateful. About the Rath J. Athletic Center. What? The David J. and Deborah C. Rath J. Athletic Center, Milliken University's newest athletics facility. Cost, $12.3 million. Size, 17,655 feet. Dedication, funded by lead gifts from Milliken alumni David, 58, and Deborah Rath J., Jim Perryman, 83, and the Perryman family. Purpose, serves as the on-campus centerpiece of Milliken Athletics, providing training, locker, and meeting rooms for student athletes in 22 sports, nearly 40% of the student body. The facilities include weight room honoring former football coach Carl Polker, 68, and Jim Perryman, 83. Locker rooms for football and men's and women's track and field. Training, conference, and team meeting rooms. Offices for football and men's and women's soccer. Recognition areas featuring retired NFL jerseys and team displays. Future use, designed to help Milliken host College Conference of Illinois and Wisconsin, CCIW, and NCAA championship events. WSOY Food Drive, goal exceeded on best day ever. Andreas Foundation's $200,000 donation takes total well past $800,000. By Valerie Wells, Decatur. The community came through again for the WSOY Community Food Drive. With moments left before the event came to a close at 6 p.m. Friday, the Andreas Foundation gave a $200,000 donation that put the final total to $867,776 in cash and food donations, almost $68,000 over the goal of $800,000. The announcement brought to a close a 12-hour broadcast on WSOY AM that encouraged and celebrated people from Decatur, Macon County, the state of Illinois, and beyond to provide food and financial donations to support the growing need of the county's food pantries. Brian Byers, who has been with the event for all of its 20-plus years and joked that he was only 14 when it started, said people don't always realize that when a community has buy-in to an effort like the food drive, it's bound to succeed. About 44% of Macon County residents live in poverty or are ALICE families, assist limited, income constrained, employed, said Debbie Bogle, executive director of United Way, and one unexpected expense can be the difference between being able to buy groceries or pay the power bill or rent. If they come up short, they need help, said Kevin Brenny, who has also been involved with the effort since its inception. You've got a mortgage, you've got utilities, you have food to buy, and you have a car accident. You need help. It's real right now. Food pantries are seeing more people who have jobs but live paycheck to paycheck, Bogle said. They are one crisis away from facing a potential food crisis, she said. So maybe they miss work due to an illness. They probably work at a place where they don't get paid if they're not there. Then they're short on their check, And then they can't pay their power bill, and things can really spiral. The community food drive can help fill that gap and take one worry away, she said. Because if those families need help, that help will be there. The Salvation Army is one of those food pantries, and Jeff Daly, who is still new to his role there, said the food drive provided a much-appreciated boost to the organization's stores. This event will have a huge impact on our food pantry, Daly said. We have seen just exponential growth in people utilizing the food pantry due to the economy and everything else. But this amazing event, it will really enable us to serve clients and people, whether they have ever used the food pantry before or they just need it as a stopgap. Students even delayed their homecoming activities on Friday to volunteer with Young Leaders in Action, and that's why the organization exists, said leader Timothea Joyner. This is just another opportunity to give back to our community, she said. That's what Young Leaders in Action is all about. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf calls the annual event the best day ever. Everybody pulling in the same direction and working to make things better for everybody else, she said. Everybody can give a little, and some people can give a lot more than others, and you feel good about trying to do something that touches somebody else. Sometimes when you give money, you don't really know where it goes. Even if it's a cause you believe in, you don't really know. But this is one time when you know that somebody will be able to go to sleep with a full stomach or get up and go to school ready to learn. This matters. Every single dollar matters. In other local news, sister cities, Civital, Germany, and Decatur, extol Bond, by Danette Beckett. Decatur. Christiane Moeller has visited Decatur 5 times in nearly 25 years. I love to meet friends every time, she said. Always friendly. Moeller is one of the 21 sister cities visitors from Civital, Germany, spending a week in Decatur. The group is staying with local host families, taking in the local attractions. We meet every 4 years, Moeller said. The Decatur sister cities visitors host families and administration recently celebrated the 50th anniversary, honoring the relationship between Decatur and Civital. The group near the Central Park sculpture, created by local artist Darren Miller, which honors Decatur's sister city partnerships with Civital Germany, as well as Tokorozawa, Japan. Miller's sculpture was unveiled during the Japanese visitors' trip to Decatur in August. The whole concept of sister cities is, let's keep talking to each other so we don't do stupid things and get into wars, Miller said. Miller is known for his abstract sculptures. I create an object that looks as though natural selection would have created it, if natural selection was metal, he said. The International Sister Cities mission is to promote peace through mutual respect, understanding, and cooperation, one individual, one community at a time. Decatur Sister Cities committee member Kathy Sorensen read from the organization's mission. The Sister Cities exchange trips often include adults and teenagers. However, this trip included adults only, according to Sarah Mixel, member of the Decatur Sister Cities organization. Decatur people will go in 2 years, and then they will come here in another 2 years, she said about the Germany exchange. A few of the attractions of this year's trip was a visit to the Agricultural Education Center, a ride on a combine at Duane Nolan's farm in Blue Mound, and dinners at local restaurants. The trip will be completed with a tour of Macon Resources, Inc., Lincoln Square Theater, and a show featuring the choir Heart and Soul. The weekend is reserved for host families' activities, such as a Millikan University game, Arthur sites, and historical Springfield. However, the group will meet at the Rock Springs Center's new outdoor educational classroom for a cookout. After the 1 week Decatur visit is complete, the German tourists will spend a week in Chicago. According to one of the visitors, Tim Sebage, Decatur has similar characteristics to Sevetal. While Hamburg, Germany, is like Chicago, that's Germany's biggest port, he said. So companies like ADM are very local for us. Sevetal has smaller farming fields called farmettes. They do produce a lot of different kinds of big varieties of produce, Mixell said. The German visitors didn't have any problems arriving in the United States. They came through with flying colors, Mixell said. Sebage has been to Decatur some 15 times, he said. Although the cities are considered sisters with similar characteristics, the local weather is a bit warm. This is about, in Fahrenheit, 15 degrees warmer than when we left, he said. In sports news, local team, the Cubs, are battling the Milwaukee Brewers in the division series for the National League. One game was played over the weekend where Milwaukee defeated the Cubs 9-3. And tonight, the second game will be on TV starting at 8 p.m. on TBS. Chirio's status for the Brewers is uncertain. Milwaukee Brewers outfielder Jackson Chirio's status for Game 2 of the team's NLDS against the Chicago Cubs remained uncertain a day after he underwent an MRI on his right hamstring. I know there are things we are going to test today, Brewers manager Pat Murphy said. He's going to be out there today. I don't know that he'll do much, but the MRI came back, and it's inconclusive. And it's not a serious hamstring strain, but it's not necessarily something that won't limit him. Game 2 of the best-of-five series is Monday night. The Cubs plan to start left-hander Shota Imanaga, while the Brewers will use lefty relief pitcher Aaron Ashby as an opener. Chirio went 3-for-3 with 3 RBIs in the first 2 innings of the Brewers' 9-3 Game 1 win Saturday, before leaving in the second inning with tightness in his right hamstring. He became the first player to ever have 3 hits in the first 2 innings of a playoff game. In the National Football League, the Chicago Bears are on a bye this week, so they will not be playing until next Sunday. The Indianapolis Colts continued their impressive start. They are now 4-1. The Colts defeated the Las Vegas Raiders 40-6 yesterday. In the WNBA Finals, best of 7, Las Vegas leads Phoenix 2-0. Las Vegas won Game 1 89-86 and Game 2 91-78. Their next game will be Wednesday at 8 p.m. on ESPN. Tonight's sports action includes Monday Night Football on ABC starting at 7:15 p.m., Kansas City Chiefs at Jacksonville Jaguars. And the Major League playoffs continue with Game 2 in the NL Division Series. The Dodgers will face the Phillies on TBS at 5:05 p.m. And as mentioned, the Chicago Cubs versus Milwaukee Game 2 will also begin at 8:05 this evening on TBS and True TV. This has been Mary reading selections from the Decatur Herald and Review from Monday, October 6th, 2025. We will be back soon. Please stay tuned.